Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last August, Blue Shield of California lost its tax-exempt status. A few weeks ago, the LA Times reported that the California Franchise Tax Board quietly stripped the San Francisco insurer of its exemption from California income taxes. Blue Shield has been tax-exempt since its founding in 1939, saving the company millions of dollars annually. Blue Shield and tax authorities are being criticized for not disclosing what the LA Times calls a landmark decision. Consumer groups are calling for legislative hearings for more information. A spokeswoman for the California Tax Agency declined to give the LA Times details about the decision, which Blue Shield is fighting. Michael Johnson, who resigned as a Blue Shield public policy director last month after 12 years with the company, says the insurer has been shortchanging the public for years by operating like its for-profit competitors. Blue Shield is technically a nonprofit. It has 3.4 million customers and posted $13.6 billion in revenue last year. Michael Johnson estimates the company could be worth $10 billion, and he launched a payback campaign. He's calling on Blue Shield to use that money to strengthen California's health care safety net and ensure that everyone gets the care they need. According to his campaign, quote, Blue Shield is run like a for-profit company, billions in profits, multi-million-dollar salaries and bonuses for executives, the same high rates as for-profit insurers, all while depriving the public of the social welfare benefits taxpayers have paid it to provide, end quote. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about how Blue Shield operates and this campaign. What are the differences between nonprofit and for-profit health insurers? Can you tell? Today, we are joined by Michael Johnson. He worked as a policy director with Blue Shield for 12 years. He resigned 2 weeks ago, saying the company fails to serve the public interest. His online campaign is called Payback. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rose. Good to be here.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Judith Bell, president of PolicyLink, a national research and action institute that works to advance economic and social equity. Judith previously directed the West Coast Office of Consumers Union, where she led campaigns in 32 states to preserve $14 billion in charitable assets when nonprofit health insurers converted to for-profit companies. And Judith joins me in studio. Hi, Judith. Thanks for coming in.
Welcome.
And we're joined by Wendell Potter, a former spokesperson for Cigna and Humana Insurance turned whistleblower. Wendell is senior analyst at the Center for Public Integrity and author of Deadly Spin and Obamacare, What's in It for Me? Hi, Wendell. Welcome back to the show. Hi, Wendell. Nice to have you. So let's start off by talking about the differences between a for-profit and non-profit health insurance company. Michael, why don't you start off with us? I don't think most people realize what the differences are. Or is that a fair assessment?
Well, there's some critical differences between the two. I mean, typically, nonprofit health plans are tax-exempt, so they're being subsidized by taxpayers. And they're being subsidized by taxpayers because they've pledged to serve the public good. And on top of that, a nonprofit health plan has no investors other than the taxpayers. So effectively, nonprofit health plans are owned by the community at large. They're owned by the community at large, and they have a duty to serve the community in the same way that for-profit companies do their shareholders. Now, you know, for-profit companies, as everybody knows, are all about, you know, their goal is to earn a return for their investors, for their shareholders, and their aim is not to serve the public good, although in the course of delivering the products and services that they deliver, there's certainly some social benefit there, but their goal is to make money for their shareholders.
And Wendell Potter, you're a former spokesperson for two for-profit insurers, Cigna and Humana. What would you add to that in terms of the differences between for-profit and nonprofit insurers?
Well, the one thing I would also add to that is that in a for-profit insurance company, not only is there
top objective to enhance shareholder value, it is also to reward the executives. I was an executive, as you noted, of two big for-profit insurance companies. Prior to that, I worked for a nonprofit integrated healthcare system in Tennessee, and I saw firsthand the stark differences in outlook, in mission, and one of the things to keep in mind that one of the uses of the revenue that for-profit insurers. What they do with a lot of their money is to buy back shares. So a lot of that money just disappears into the pockets of executives and shareholders rather than going to the community in any beneficial way or to improve services that goes into the pockets of those who own the shares.
Because their profits are just continually increasing. There were a number of stories that came out late last year about how Obamacare has really been a windfall for the health insurance industry.
It really has. I've been tracking that since I left the industry to see how much the stock price has been increasing, how much they're how profitable they are, and it has been quite a windfall for insurance companies. And you have a better picture into how for-profits are operating and benefiting than, frankly, you do nonprofits because of those disclosure requirements. But the stock price of the largest for-profit companies have, in many cases, increased more than threefold since the Affordable Care Act was enacted.
According to Oaktree Financial, Aetna, Anthem, Cigna, Humana, and United Health Group, their stocks are up an average of 107% over the past 7 years. And what would you add to that, Judith? First of all, is it fair to say that most people don't know the differences between nonprofits and for-profits? When I first heard that Blue Shield had its tax-exempt status revoked, I didn't even know that it was tax exempt and didn't know that it's a nonprofit.
Well, I think that is the important point, is that there are, in fact, nonprofit health insurers and for-profit health insurance, but we really can't tell the difference. And we should be able to tell the difference, because if we can't tell the difference in the billions of dollars that they're holding and essentially public assets, charitable assets, maybe they could be used for other purposes and maybe they would be better used for other purposes. And this moment in this controversy around Blue Shield, I think, lifts up those very questions and should push regulators, should push the public, should push legislators to look more deeply and ask these fundamental questions. Are these assets being used in a way that are the best use for them because they are public charitable assets at their very core?
Are there any different rules about what for-profit insurance companies can do and what nonprofits can do? I'm specifically thinking of Prop 45, for example, which was a proposition in our last election which would have allowed California's insurance commissioner to reject health insurance price changes. And the no side raised $43 million. They got a lot of money from Kaiser, giving $15 million. WellPoint gave $12 million. Blue Shield contributed almost $10 million. So even if you're a nonprofit, you can still give money to a proposition.
Oh, yes.
Or, to oppose a proposition
in
this
they're,
case.
They are allowed to do that as they operate. They are regulated, and in fact, it's the Department of Managed Health Care that really has the most power here to ask these fundamental questions and to push Blue Shield to either operate more as a nonprofit so you can actually tell a difference, or to push them to become a for-profit for us to capture those assets in a way that we can direct them to charitable uses.
Blue Shield has been tax-exempt since its founding in 1939. Back then, could you tell the difference between a nonprofit and a for-profit? Or not even then, say in the 60s or the 80s. I mean, have things changed much?
Well, I think actually going back to the beginning is important.
Okay.
Because actually when Blue Cross was created and Blue Shield was created, it was essentially a charitable step to figure out how to give people health insurance. It just didn't exist at that point. So just by its nature, to figure out how communities of people were going to come together and share the risk associated with health, right, by insuring each other, that was at its very basic a charitable notion. And that's why they incorporated, right, as nonprofit charitable enterprises. But now, fast forward all the way to where we are today, health insurance is very much a competitive marketplace. You got shareholders, you got gigantic companies, et cetera. And that essence from which they began, we just don't know if it's there anymore. That's really what we're asking today.
Wendell, are there any rules about rate hikes? Are there any differences? Because last year, Blue Shield asked for a 6% rate hike despite $4 billion in reserves.
No, there really isn't, depending on your tax status. It is one thing to keep in mind is that nonprofit plans really ought to be able to offer, if they're running a good operation, they ought to be able to offer reduced rates than for-profits, just because they don't have to divert so much of what they take in to reward shareholders. But in terms of any mechanism to force them to do that, there isn't, and I don't know that there really should be. But one point that that I think we should make, and that is going back to the history of health insurance and the early Blue Cross and Blue Shield plans did operate on a what is referred to as a community rated basis. Everybody paid essentially the same thing, regardless of their health status or their age or their gender. And that began to change over the years, and things began to change, I think, for the worse when nonprofits began to convert to for-profit companies. And we've seen that the industry now is dominated by huge for-profit companies across the country, and they pretty much set the way the marketplace operates. And the nonprofits, quite frankly, pretty much have to operate by the rules that have been established by the big players.
We invited Blue Shield to join us. They declined our interview request, but they did send us a few statements on the issue of rate increases. They say that the rate increases are an adjustment, are a reflection of rising costs and an adjustment to the changes brought on by the Affordable Care Act. Michael Johnson, what's your response to that?
Well, I mean, I think Judith really kind of laid this out perfectly, and that is that there really should be a difference between nonprofit plans and for-profit plans. If nonprofit plans aren't providing us, the community, any special benefits, and one clear benefit would be that they're delivering lower rates to consumers because, as Wendell puts it, they're not having to return money to shareholders. If they can't manage to provide that benefit to consumers, then I think it's right for us to ask, is our investment in Blue Shield, and we have a $10 billion investment in Blue Shield. That's what Blue Shield is worth. It's owned by the community. We're its only shareholders. Is that $10 billion being put to good use, sitting in Blue Shield's hands when they can't even deliver lower rates to us? Or would it be better for Blue Shield to officially convert to a for-profit, which would mean acting basically the way it acts today, since it acts like a for-profit, and having that $10 billion instead come back to the community so that it could be invested in healthcare safety net programs or in a variety of other community benefit activities? So I think that, again, if lower rates would be one clear benefit that you would expect to get from a nonprofit plan, and if they can't do that, then maybe it's time for us to cash out our investment in Blue Shield.
You're calling on Blue Shield to convert to a for-profit. How would that change anything? How would that change anything for its 3.4 million customers?
Well, it probably wouldn't change things for its customers. Today, it acts basically just like a for-profit, so there probably wouldn't be much difference between the way Blue Shield operates and the way Anthem Blue Cross, which is a for-profit, operates. But it would produce $10 billion, and that's not a small amount of money, to be used directly for community benefit.
Look, there's two ways to look at this issue right now. The fundamental question we're asking is, does Blue Shield act differently, look differently by virtue of being a nonprofit? And if the answer is no, then there is a regulator here, right? The Department of Managed Health Care could step in and say, Blue Shield, we want you to operate differently. We want you to operate differently because you're a nonprofit, and here are the things we expect from you. And the question is whether they will do that, whether they can succeed at that, whether they can do it over the long term, and whether it will be substantial enough that we shouldn't go for the alternative. And the alternative is what Michael's laying out. Should they become a for-profit, and should we take those $10 billion and figure out how we want to use them in some type of charitable effort? And there are examples from history. We had a number of conversions in the 90s. We had Blue Cross converting, we had WellPoint converting, and we created these relatively large foundations that have focused on improving the health of Californians. So we know what those dollars could be used for potentially, and now we just have to, we really need to focus on asking that fundamental question.
Okay, so again, can you lay out for us what changes would we see if Blue Shield actually acted like a nonprofit?
Well, I mean, I think that's the question. Could they have lower rates? Could they offer other kinds of services that aren't offered? What would that mean in terms of them operating and who would come and what would happen? I mean, that is the question. How can they operate differently? And how can they operate differently in a marketplace that has so many for-profits? And if they can't, then let's use those assets for something else.
And to all three of you, is there a nonprofit health insurance company, or do we call it organization if it's a nonprofit, that is acting in this way? Can you point to one, Judith?
Well, Kaiser's our largest nonprofit, and it's huge. And I think there are ways you can point to that Kaiser operates differently. And I think you can point to it. They have a completely different model, right? They have the health maintenance organization. They tend to have a much longer-term view. They've got a lot of focus on prevention. Just recently on the front pages here in the Bay Area, right, we heard about this big study they're doing around autism. They've got a big community benefits focus. I mean, I'm not doing an advertisement for Kaiser, but just as someone in the marketplace, I can point to numbers of different things that make them different, and they are a very large nonprofit.
Right, but it is good to have comparisons. Wendell, do you have any?
Yes, and if you look across the country, Kaiser is a good example, as Judith noted, but there are also nonprofit plans that operate across the country that are among the best in the country. If you look at Massachusetts, a lot of the best plans in the country are there, and they operate on a nonprofit basis. And one thing to keep in mind, too, is if you look at the how health plans fare, how they rank in ratings by the National Committee for Quality Assurance, which does an annual survey or provides information about how the health plans are faring in many different measures, it's the nonprofit plans that are always at the top, and the for-profit plans are always at the bottom. In other words, they're devoting more time generally, more resources generally, to improve the health and well-being of the people who are enrolled in their plans. And that's been something that that has been the case from the very beginning that the NCQA has been doing these measures.
You know, Wendell said something at the very beginning that I just want to point to, which is this question of what's the mission and what's the outlook and how pervasive, what is it that every employee understands? And I think what you would find at a nonprofit is that there is a sense of a broader mission versus if you're at a for-profit, you know that you need to be paying attention to how your work is going to deliver for the bottom line. That is at its very base, right, and drives what happens in the company top to bottom, right to left.
Michael, you want to jump in?
But I was going to say that's what a nonprofit ought to be doing. It ought to have that mission. There ought to be a kind of a different cultural attitude within the organization that this is all about benefiting the community. And that just frankly wasn't true at Blue Shield. Blue Shield looked and felt too much like a for-profit company. Its quality rankings are in the middle of the pack. Kaiser's level of quality is generally rated, you know, the highest in the country in most markets. That's not true of Blue Shield. Blue Shield looks no different than Anthem, Blue Cross, in terms of where it ranks on quality scores. So the problem here is not that theoretically nonprofit health plans can't deliver real value to the community. I'm certainly not opposed to the notion of a nonprofit health plan. It's that Blue Shield of California in particular has not been acting in a way that provides real tangible benefit to the community. And I think it's worth considering whether the community wouldn't get far better value out of the $10 billion that Blue Shield is sitting on and taking that money and putting it to other more clearly charitable uses.
And Wendell Potter, I know we have to let you go. What was your reaction when you heard that the California Franchise Tax Board quietly stripped Blue Shield of its exemption from California income taxes?
Well, I guess I'm not surprised that it did so quietly. Certainly, Blue Shield didn't have any incentive, I guess, to disclose that. It's a shame that it wasn't disclosed much earlier than it was. I do think this presents an opportunity for regulators and lawmakers to just look at this overall and determine what differences should there be, and how should nonprofits be required to operate, and what are the obligations for nonprofits when it comes to community benefit? I think this is something that presents Californians and the country with an opportunity to really determine what is the difference, and how can we, if we continue to have nonprofit health plans, which I certainly hope that we will, I'd hate to see more convert, quite frankly, to for-profit status, but how can we make sure that the nonprofits are living up to what they say what their mission really is?
Well, Wendell, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Wendell Potter is a former spokesperson for Cigna and Humana turned whistleblower. He's senior analyst at the Center for Public Integrity, author of Deadly Spin and Obamacare, What's in It for Me? We're also joined by Michael Johnson. He worked as a policy director with Blue Shield for 12 years. He resigned a few weeks ago, saying the company fails to serve the public interest. He recently launched an online campaign called Payback, urging Blue Shield to give back $10 billion in community assets. And Judith Bell is president of PolicyLink. She previously led campaigns in 32 states for Consumers Union to preserve $14 billion in assets when nonprofit health insurers converted to for-profit companies. Before the break, just talking a little bit more about the tax-exempt revocation. The LA Times broke this story a couple of weeks ago, and they interviewed the tax agency, and the tax agency declined to give the LA Times details about why they did this. Do we know? Legislators are calling for hearings, saying that we need more information about this.
Yeah, hearings are a very good idea. We do need to understand what happened here.
We don't know.
We know that Blue Shield is appealing, but we don't know what led the tax agency to do this. And I would just say this is not something that happens every day. This is highly unusual. I don't know of another example. Somebody else might, but this is not something that you see. I don't know any nonprofit insurer that has ever lost their status this way. And it is why I think it raises some very fundamental questions that we really need to be examining. The legislature should be looking. The regulator should be looking. The public should be pushing for a lot of attention to this matter.
Michael Johnson, you were still at Blue Shield when it lost its tax-exempt status. How did executives respond to this decision?
Well, frankly, I, being aware of the investigation or the examination that was occurring, I had hoped that that would allow me to get the attention of executives and to get their interest in refocusing the organization and getting the organization to take its nonprofit duties far more seriously. I was raising concerns about Blue Shield's failure to do that and went to executives right at that time with some recommendations about changes Blue Shield ought to make to really kind of make it clear to itself, to people within the organization, that the organization serves the community. I resigned because I wasn't successful in getting them to make any changes. So I would have thought, and one would think, that this examination would have prompted a real kind of change in direction there, but it didn't.
Well, after the break, I will read a statement from Blue Shield about the tax exemption decision. Again, last August, Blue Shield of California lost its tax exempt status. A few weeks ago, the LA Times broke this story and reported that the state's franchise tax board quietly stripped the insurer of its exemption. So today we're talking about that and also the differences between for-profit and nonprofit health insurance companies. We'll be back after this.
This is your call on KALW Local Public Radio. To join in today's conversation, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255. Again, 866-798-TALK. Let us know if you're a first-time caller. We love to hear from new voices on the program. If you'd prefer to write rather than call, the email address is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up in 30 minutes at 11 o'clock from the BBC, it's World Have Your Say. And then at noon today, Bina from our friends at the Jewish Community Center here in San Francisco.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing coverage of the United States' $3 trillion pension system. Cities and states are investing a larger portion of their worker pensions in high-risk Wall Street investments. We will also discuss the Saudi-led military assault in Yemen. Next week, we are putting shows together about Birthright. It's a new performance at the Brava Theater about the importance of Planned Parenthood. We'll also be discussing a new PBS Frontline documentary about the horrific tragedies that we're currently seeing in Yemen. And we'll be talking also about gender in Silicon Valley. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the differences between nonprofit and for-profit health insurance companies. And we got the idea to do this because last August, Blue Shield of California, a nonprofit, lost its tax-exempt status. The LA Times broke this story a couple weeks ago and reported that the California Franchise Tax Board quietly stripped the insurer of its income tax, its exemption from income taxes in August. But it did this quietly, and a spokesperson for the tax agency declined to give the LA Times details about the decision. Blue Shield is fighting it. And now we've got legislators asking for hearings to get more information. Today, we're joined by Michael Johnson. He worked as a policy director with Blue Shield for 12 years. He recently launched an online campaign urging Blue Shield to give back $10 billion in community assets and convert to a for-profit. You can find that campaign at yourcallradio.org. Judith Bell is president of Policy Link. It's a research institute that works to advance economic and social equity. When she worked for Consumers Union, she led a 32-state campaign to preserve $14 billion in charitable assets when nonprofit health insurance companies convert to for-profits. So what questions do you have about the differences? Are you aware of your insurance company, if it's a for-profit or a nonprofit? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. And also, did you hear about the tax-exempt status that Blue Shield lost? What's your reaction? We can't really give you details because, unfortunately, we just don't have any right now. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We did invite Blue Shield. They declined our interview request, but they sent us statements. And here's what they said about the tax-exempt status loss. Quote, "We pay federal income taxes, state gross premium tax, and Affordable Care Act taxes. We believe we meet the requirements for a state income tax exemption and have challenged the California Franchise Tax Board's finding to revoke our tax-exempt status. We filed California state income tax returns beginning in the 2013 tax year." Judith, what's your response to that statement?
Well, my response to that statement is that the Franchise Tax Board took a very unusual step, and that it's a good moment for the legislature to ask for more details and for regulators to ask more details. Let's figure out why that was revoked, and let's look at Blue Shield as a nonprofit and see whether or not they are meeting this required mission to be serving the broader community. And if they're not, there really are steps that could be taken to use those assets in a different way. But this is the moment to ask those questions.
And the LA Times reports that this tax-exempt status saved Blue Shield millions of dollars annually.
There's a first question, right, also about whether or not they owe those back taxes. And that's a question that I'm sure is being asked by the Franchise Tax Board and will be asked in these appeals. So there's that question.
And that's a lot of money because they've been tax exempt since 1939.
That's right. That's right. And, it'll be up to the Franchise Tax Board to decide for how long that the revocation applies to and all those questions. But there really is a fundamental question about if they don't have that tax status, what is it that the Franchise Tax Board expected to
see that they didn't see. And what does that tell us about the fact that there are these charitable assets? You know, Michael's saying $10 billion, billions of dollars. They're not being used charitably. How might we use them? And then maybe we should be pushing Blue Shield to be a for-profit and use those assets differently.
Michael?
Yeah, Rose, it's really, you know, the assets are really what people ought to be have their eyes on. I mean, the assets there, we're talking billions of dollars. The taxes that Blue Shield would pay if this revocation is finalized are in the millions of dollars. So the benefit to the community of Blue Shield simply paying taxes, even back taxes, is relatively minor compared to the benefit that the community would get if those assets are put to use for the benefit of the community. And so now another kind of an interesting thing about Blue Shield statements, they talk about the federal taxes that they're paying. The reason they're paying federal taxes is because back in 1986, the federal government decided that these Blue Cross Blue Shield nonprofit plans that were essentially acting not very differently from their for-profit competitors no longer deserve federal tax exemption. And so the feds decided back then that these types of organizations, Blue Shield of California included, were not providing enough benefit to the public to justify their federal tax exemption. So that I think that really kind of, again, underscores this question about whether or not Blue Shield of California is providing enough benefit here in California, not only to justify their tax exemption, but for us to continue to trust Blue Shield to put those $10 billion in community assets to work for the community.
Well, we've got a number of callers on this, so let's hear from Kayla in San Francisco, visiting from Michigan. Hi, Kayla. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me, and thank you for touching on this very important subject. I really appreciate you guys bringing this to light. So my question revolves around, I've been in the industry for a while, and from a medical loss ratio, or what percentage of the dollars that they get from a federal perspective or from a state perspective, taxpayer perspective, must be spent on care or improvement of care? And then how can we bring, you know, how can we collectively, not just in California, but across the nation, kind of get behind this cause? Because I think it's such an important thing to bring to light.
Thank you. It's a great question. And as someone who has kind of a nasty relationship with my own health insurance company, like so many people, what does it even mean when you talk about improvement of care? I mean, after Obamacare, so many health insurance agencies pulled support from various clinics, and people are just pulling their hair out because they have no idea what's covered. One thing changes from one week to the next. So in this context, what does that mean when a health insurance company is supposed to invest in improvement of care, Judith?
Well, you know, one thing that's true under the Affordable Care Act is we're changing the way we're actually going to look at health insurers, because we're going to ask them more about the outcomes. How well did you get better, right? And if you didn't get better, then that should have some ramifications. We're still in this process of shaking the whole system out.
Right.
And it might be more confusing than it was before, but it's certainly at least as confusing. But we are changing the way that we're going to reimburse and compensate insurance companies. And the hope is that by changing those incentives, we will change the outcomes that all of us see as we move through the healthcare marketplace.
Does the state have rules in place that say if you're a nonprofit, you should be allocating a certain amount to improvement of care?
The state doesn't have any specific requirements around the nonprofit. The state has oversight of rates. The state has oversight about how much is spent. The state looks to make sure that there's solvency and all that. But there's no particular rule that says because you're a nonprofit, you should spend this much more than a for-profit would.
Okay, so then how would you answer Kayla's question?
Well, Kayla's asking the big question about just how rates are overseen. And Michael may be able to answer this in greater detail. I don't know the ins and outs of all the rate rules, but there are rules that put essentially a floor that says you shall spend at least, I think it's 80%, but I could be mistaken. Michael, do you know what the rule is?
Yes, that's right. It's, yeah, under the Obamacare and under state law, insurers have to spend at least 80% of every dollar that they take in on medical care. That's a requirement that applies to both for-profits and nonprofits. And as Judith indicated earlier, and I think this is a point worth underscoring, there are no requirements in state law regarding what a nonprofit health insurer has to do. We do have laws about what nonprofit hospitals have to do to show that they're providing benefit to the community, but there's a complete void there as it relates to the nonprofit obligations of health plans. And I think that's one where if we're gonna decide that, well, we want Blue Shield to hang on to that $10 billion and we're going to trust them to put that to good use for the community, at a minimum, we're going to need some state legislation specifying exactly what it is an organization like Blue Shield needs to do to show that it is benefiting the community.
What about transparency? I mean, what if we want to find out how insurers are spending money? Because in the statement Blue Shield sent us, it said, quote, a longtime supporter of healthcare reform, we limit our net income to 2% of revenue and have contributed $325 million to our foundation's efforts to improve the health safety net and address domestic violence, end quote. Michael?
Well, you know, Blue Shield says that that they limit their profits to 2%, which is true. But at the end of the day, the reason that they limit their profits to 2% is because their expenses are so high. We know that their rates, as the LA Times reported, are no lower than their competitors. So in order for Blue Shield to be competitive out there in the marketplace, since its expenses are higher than, say, Anthem Blue Crosses and its other for-profit competitors, it has no choice but to limit its profits. That's exactly what a for-profit company would do if they had particularly high expenses. They'd have to ratchet back their profits in order to be able to offer a price that attracts customers. So I don't think there isn't any public benefit in Blue Shield limiting its profits to some level unless that is translating into actually lower rates for consumers. Now, Blue Shield does. They say that they've given $300 and some million, and that is over a long period of time to their foundation. The Blue Shield of California Foundation does do good, worthwhile work for the community, including providing grants to domestic violence shelters. But Blue Shield is contributing about $35 million a year to its foundation. So you've got this $10 billion community asset, which is what Blue Shield represents, and that's providing to the community about $35 million a year. That's a return of less than one-third of 1%, not a particularly, robust return.
And also, again, last year, Blue Shield gave $10 million to the No on 45 side, which would have allowed the state's insurance commissioner to reject health insurance price changes if he thought that they didn't have good reason for it. And it did lose. Prop 45 did go down. We have a question from John who says, can you explain how this $10 billion held by Blue Shield through its tax-exempt status could or would be returned to the public?
So the way the process works, if a nonprofit is going to convert, is the Department of Managed Health Care has a whole way both of first valuing the company, right? You have a nonprofit, it's going to become a for-profit. How much is it valued? And in the prior examples, like when Blue Cross became a for-profit, the chief way that we captured those assets, we captured that value, was we created foundations that actually held a lot of the stock for the new company, plus an infusion of cash. And then as the company became for-profit, the marketplace, right, purchased the shares and told us what that value was. And then those foundations diversified their portfolios so they wouldn't just have that stock. And then they have made, you know, examples like the California Endowment, the California Healthcare Foundation, the Wellness Foundation. They've all made big investments in communities across the state in a huge variety of efforts that are designed to improve the health of Californians. And so that's how we would capture those assets. And then the state could make any number of different decisions. They could give the dollars to existing foundations. They could create a new one. They could come up with some other use that would be charitable for the use of those assets.
And at this point, we don't know what decision the state will take on this issue, because this is all brand new, right? Politicians are still asking for a legislative hearing for more information about why Blue Shield lost its tax-exempt status. It quietly happened last August, reported in the New York Times 2 weeks ago. A tax agency spokeswoman declined to give the LA Times details. Do we have any information about what triggered this? Was there some kind of hearing that we don't know about? No idea.
I don't know if Michael knows anything, but we don't. Well, publicly, we don't know anything.
Michael?
That's right. Publicly, yeah. We don't know anything. I really can't kind of get into details about what I know based on kind of my employment at Blue Shield. So, yes, publicly, we don't know anything. What we do know, though, is that the Franchise Tax Board, in order for a company or a nonprofit to qualify for exemption under this particular section of the tax code, which is the social welfare exemption, Blue Shield would need to demonstrate that it is operating exclusively for social welfare purposes. And so I think you can presume that the tax exemption was withdrawn because Blue Shield failed to be able to demonstrate that.
Michael Johnson worked as a policy director with Blue Shield for 12 years. He resigned a few weeks ago, saying the company fails to serve the public interest. His payback campaign is urging Blue Shield to give back $10 billion in community assets. Judith Bell is president of Policy Link, a research institute that works to advance economic and social equity. She previously worked at Consumers Union, where she led a 32-state campaign to preserve $14 billion in charitable assets when nonprofit health insurers converted to for-profit. Profits. We've got a question from Celine, who says, "We are especially surprised to learn of Blue Shield's nonprofit status after having found that as healthy 60-somethings, we are to be charged $1,600 a month under the ACA for a good but not spectacular plan. Would it be helpful for citizens to write or call their state representatives, urging them to pressure the Department of Managed Health Care or the Franchise Tax Board to scrutinize all nonprofit health insurance companies?"
Yes, I think that's a very important step, and I think it's very important at this moment for legislators to take steps, for the regulator to take steps. Let's figure out the best use of these assets. Let's push these companies to deliver what they are required to deliver as nonprofits. And let's look across the board at all the different things that they might be able to do more to deliver real benefits to communities around the state.
I'm assuming, since Celine said 60-somethings, plural, she's paying $1,600 for two people. How common is that? That's a huge monthly premium.
Yeah, I mean, the monthly premiums can be quite high. And for particularly folks as they get into their 60s and higher, they can be paying a lot of money for coverage.
Well, we'll have to do another ACA show. All right. Well, thank you for the email, Celine. And let's go next to Betsy Emholtz, who's calling from Consumers Union. Hi, Betsy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I joined Consumers Union just as Judith was really leading the charge all over the country to get public conversation going about what it means to be a nonprofit and to have these conversions really exposed to public view. And we've been raising for the past several years here at Consumers Union, looking at the rate filings by Blue Shield of California, questions about the continued contribution to surplus, for example, that they built into their rates every year, building that surplus larger and larger. We went back into the archives and found a 1939 statement at the founding by Blue Shield's Board of Trustees stating that any surplus that they accumulated beyond what's needed for paying the doctors would be used, and I quote, to either reduce rates to the beneficiaries or extend the services offered to them. And, you know, that's the end of the quote. And they certainly seem to have strayed from this initial intent. So I couldn't agree more with the callers and Judith and others that the regulators, the AG, legislators really need to get on this, shed some light on it, and really find out what's happening here. We know the surplus has been just one of the issues, although we don't know if the tax board was looking at that one in particular.
And Betsy, in the statement Blue Shield sent us, they said our rate increase is directly tied to the cost of health care. The reserves are intended to protect members and the mission by ensuring that their claims can always be paid. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, regulators have minimum standards for reserves that are needed to protect solvency. But beyond that, they are many times beyond the minimum required, and way beyond. And they've been contributing tens of millions of dollars to other endeavors, including $1.2 billion that they have set aside now to purchase a new company. So I think they've gone way beyond the minimum needed to pay claims.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in, Betsy M. Holtz with Consumers Union. And let's go next to Olaf in San Francisco. Hi, Olaf. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My question is probably towards Michael. I've been a member of Blue Cross, Blue Shield of California for several years, and we all have received a letter that they will sever their relationship to all of the California Pacific Health Centers in San Francisco, which they have taken back, but I'm just curious if this sort of cutting the relationship to Sutter Health has any connection to losing the tax-exempt status.
No, that's a completely separate issue, and I believe, actually, you'll have to kind of check with Blue Shield, but I believe that they have worked out their differences with Sutter Health, and that won't be happening. But you need to check directly with Blue Shield. It is a separate issue, though.
Michael, can you give us any insights as to why Blue Shield cuts relationships with various clinics? Because I know a lot of people lost their coverage right after Obamacare, and they were surprised by it.
Well, I mean, you know, I can tell you that insurance companies generally are constantly they're contracting with hospitals and medical groups, and they'll try and negotiate the best rates that they can, and sometimes they'll have differences, contract disputes with those providers, and can't agree on a price, and that's when those relationships are often severed.
Well, thank you for calling in, Olaf. Michael, you left 2 weeks ago from Blue Shield, and you have brought up these issues over your 12 years with the company, but more pointedly in the last 6 months. Talk a little bit about how management responded or didn't respond to you, and what led you to finally leave.
Well, I mean, what you know, over the years that I was there, I became increasingly frustrated that Blue Shield didn't seem to be operating any differently from its for-profit competitors, didn't seem to really be providing the kind of community benefit that it ought to be providing. And I raised those concerns with management. Around the time more recently, while this examination by the Franchise Tax Board was going on, I hope that the fact that this wasn't just me raising these issues, but the Franchise Tax Board was doing that as well, that would prompt Blue Shield to adopt a different approach. But management wasn't interested. And so that was what prompted me to leave. I've come to the conclusion that Blue Shield really can't be trusted with that $10 billion in community assets, and that without question, those billions could be put to much better use for the community if we got them out of Blue Shield and invested them in community benefit projects directly ourselves.
What are you hearing from your former colleagues?
Well, it's interesting. I've actually gotten a number of emails and LinkedIn messages from former Blue Shield employees, some quite senior level people who've been urging me on and kind of telling me that they had similar concerns while they were at Blue Shield. So that has been encouraging. I suspect I've heard from a couple of people internally who are still at Blue Shield as well. But obviously, people have been a lot more cautious about reaching out to me from within the company right now. But I suspect, given the number of people recently, sort of ex Blue Shield employees that I've heard from, I suspect that there are a lot of people internally who feel the same way.
We have a few emails about universal health care and single payer. Jane says, listening to all the convolutions of the American healthcare system in this show, I'm more convinced than ever that universal health care is really the only answer. Michael, what are your thoughts on that? And what do health insurance executives say about calls for
single-payer Medicare for All system?
A single-payer Medicare for All system, as you can imagine, isn't a particularly popular idea within the health insurance industry. I'm not quite sure how I feel about it myself. I certainly think that everybody ought to be covered. I think that it ought to be a government obligation to ensure that everybody is covered. The Medicare program has a lot of inefficiencies, has high costs. I don't know that simply expanding Medicare to everybody would be the best solution, but I think that it's certainly we need to kind of move more in that direction for sure.
I thought something that Wendell said earlier was really important to lift up, and that's how good it has been to have the Affordable Care Act. Right? Not only do we have, what is it, like 12 million people who have coverage now who didn't before. So people like who have a sense of security around their health care that they did not have. But we've seen great improvements for the economy, right? Health costs have gone down. And then the thing that's so ironic is the very insurance companies, the vast majority of whom opposed Obamacare, have seen this huge increase in their stock, right? Which speaks to the fact that covering people for health care is actually good for the economy. It's good for us as individuals. It's good for our family. It's good for our future, and it turns out it's actually good for companies as well, at least in this current mode that we have advanced under Obamacare.
Yeah, and I have to say, because I know we'll get phone calls about this, we've done so many shows about it. It does help some, but it also penalizes others. I mean, the woman who wrote in earlier, $1,600 a month for two people. I mean, a lot of people saw their rates just skyrocket. My rates are going up almost every 6 months to a year. So don't you agree, Judith? But, I mean, it
Rose,
does help
Rose,
some, but not others. Yeah.
If I could jump in
sure,
there,
just,
I don't
just
think,
quickly.
I think Obamacare rates are high. They were high before Obamacare happened. They're going to continue to rise despite Obamacare. But I think, if anything, Obamacare has actually made the market more competitive. It's helped to curb the rate, the kind of rate increases that we would otherwise have seen.
We have 20 seconds left. Judith, on this issue, what's the best thing people can do to raise their voices?
I think the best thing they can do is to either call the Department of Managed Health Care Plans or call their legislators and demand that there be public hearings to look at these questions around Blue Shield and its nonprofit status.
And consumer groups are calling for hearings for more information. Judith Bell is president of PolicyLink. She worked with Consumers Union on these issues. And Michael Johnson worked as a policy director with Blue Shield for 12 years. He resigned 2 weeks ago, saying the company fails to serve the public interest. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of the United States' $3 trillion pension system. Cities and states are investing a larger portion of their worker pensions in high-risk Wall Street investments. We'll also discuss the Saudi-led military assault in Yemen. We'll be joined by the International Business Times' David Sirota and Marip's Chris Tozing. Where did you see the best reporting this week? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Knock Wynn produces the show, Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.